What's up, fight fan? You're listening to MMA Daily, the podcast where we bring you the latest in the world of mixed martial arts. It is Monday, April 29th, 2024, and this week's episode, UFC 301, The Path of Pantoja. We'll talk about this past Saturday's UFC main event, the flyweight bout between Mateusz Nicolaou and Alex Perez, talk about the latest in MMA news. Bellator Paris has undergone some changes for May 17th, and a specific former UFC champion is making quite the brief turnaround following a big fight. And we'll cap it off by talking about this Saturday's UFC pay-per-view. UFC 301, Alexandre Pantoja taking on Steve Ercig, and Jonathan Martinez taking on the returning Hall of Famer Jose Aldo. My name is Gabriel Gonzalez, and I'm joined by my co-host, Natalie Zamudio.
Double G, am I the only one still thinking about Max Holloway? Because I haven't stopped since that night of UFC 300. I don't know. Just me?
I think people, it's, what is it? It's living rent-free,
yeah,
as they would say. As Gen Z would say, it is your Roman Empire that we think about every day. You know, so. No, you are definitely not alone, if I may say. If anything, I feel like just more people have now had time to do more edits, so it just kind of keeps breathing new life. You know what I mean?
Yeah, and he just did the Joe Rogan podcast, and so now you're getting to hear a little inside perspective. It's it's still filling the air, and it's a good thing. What a gosh darn beautiful moment that was.
Yes, but we have new stuff to talk about.
Yeah,
we can't keep talking about Max.
I know I could go another hour for Max, but yeah, let's move it on to modern current events.
I mean, so look, Alex Perez, he was filling in for Manel Kopp. He had about a little under a month's notice for this fight against Mateusz Nicolaou. And look, we talked about it. I know that the fans weren't exactly, you know, ranting and raving about Nicolaou and Kopp to begin with, especially with this, I think, very clear, very obvious now, post-UFC 300 fatigue. This is the first UFC event since, you know, probably going to go down as the pay-per-view of the year, unless McGregor and Chandler go off. The fact is, Perez went in there against a guy who, let's be real, even if it looked ugly, would probably get the next title shot. And he executed a beautiful game plan. I loved his movement. I loved his shot selection. I loved his variety. I thought that he did a great job Nicolaou a lot of volume. And to Nicolaou's credit, I thought he did a good job of minimizing a lot of the damage. A lot of shots did hit more of the guard. Looked like he was wearing everything well. It looked like he was staying patient and trying to stay the course against a very active Perez. But on the scorecards, for sure on volume, Perez was getting after it in the first. Nothing really dramatic obviously happens. Then we get to the second round, more of the same. I thought that Nicolaou was actually starting to get a little bit, you know, sit down on a little more, try to see a little more, make it happen. Perez keeps going, and you see that moment around halfway through the round, gets Nicolaou moving backward. Nicolaou circles a little bit to the left, a la Dan Henderson, Michael Bisping, and Perez just catches him square on the button, right off of his feet. Nicolaou crumples. Perez pulls off the upset. Natalie, let me remind you, this is a guy who had about like 6 or 7 cancellations since 2020. This is a guy who was on a skid. This is a guy that I think a lot of fans kind of let, you know, kind of fall out of their consciousness back in a big way. What are your thoughts?
It was a fun fight. And they were going back and forth. What I liked about Perez was the combinations. You know, when he found that opening, he was launching like 4 to 6 punch combinations, which is not common. And they were really strong. Each one had a strategic landing point. So I was like, okay, man, this guy's getting after it. But then, Mateo started picking it up, started fighting back, and it was looking like it was just going to be, not just, it was looking like it was going to be a solid, you know, back and forth battle. Perez launched a combo. I think I have to rewatch it, but I feel like he launched a similar combination to the one that ended up finishing the fight just before that, further back in the octagon, and then got him up against the cage and crumpled him. Like when the leg buckles and you fall, it's over, right? So very, very exciting win. And those moments when you come on short notice and you're able to do this, it's like, man, is that just a magical moment, magical night? Or is there something to, like, Bisping Rockhold, you know, when you're not overtraining? I don't know Perez enough to know if that's the case for him, but it's interesting to have these moments where someone comes off the sofa, you know, not literally, probably he was already in fine shape, but comes in on short notice and does something amazing. So, and like throws a wrench in whatever plans were sort of starting to work themselves out. So this is a great win for Perez.
Yeah, look, I'm happy for him. I mean, you got to imagine you go through all the things you go through, the fights falling apart, injury. Obviously, you weren't getting the dubs leading up to it. It's a big moment, right? And I think that's very fair. I don't think that I'm being unfair to him by bringing up the fact that, you know, this is a, you know, probably felt like a must win for Mr. Perez. And which leads to the very interesting one. Like I said, Nicolau rankings, win streak, all this other stuff was probably right there for a title shot, especially considering the current landscape that has been shaped by Alexandre Pantoja. You know, I love saying his name.
Yep.
Pantoja beat Perez on his way to the title. Pantoja is still not lost since beating Perez. Pantoja's on probably the best run. Brandon Moreno lost is out of the picture. Brandon Royval, two losses to Pantoja. Manel Kopp was supposed to be here, missed weight for his last fight, had to withdraw from this one. Also one of the victims of the Pantoja win streak. Quite simply, I look at this and I have a theory, but I'm going to let you go first. I'm not really sure where we can go with the pieces. And now, look, to be fair, Steve Ersig, for all the criticism I know he's getting coming into this main event, which we'll talk about later, he could very easily change the whole game. And we have Perez Ersig very soon. It could very easily happen. Most people are expecting a Pantoja win. In which case, where do we really go with the flyweight title picture? Really, the entire flyweight division right now. And that's my question for you.
Yeah, I don't know, man. This is one of those divisions where it's like, okay, now what? And it kind of has been that for a long time. Even, you know, when Mighty Mouse was reigning supreme, it was like, okay, who's going to fight Mighty Mouse next? Then you had Davison Figueiredo, Henry Cejudo, but he left too soon. And so we never got to see how the division would have fared going, like putting a conveyor belt up against him and just feeding him flyweights. He wanted to do the double champ and all that stuff. Davison Figueiredo was so big, it seemed like nobody would beat him. And then, you know, Brandon Moreno, it seemed like he was going to be the guy. But then since that, it's been bouncing around. Figueiredo, Moreno, Figueiredo, Pantoja. So, and then the guys that are coming up, it's a little bit like, how do I say this? I know them less than fighters in the other divisions, right? And maybe that's just part of the struggle that flyweight has had over the years. Or, you know, maybe I just need to pay more attention to the flyweights. I don't know. You tell me. But all that being said, yeah, I'm not sure. You got Steve Ersig, who, you know, we'll get into it later, but this is his fourth fight in the UFC. He's already getting a shot at the, you know, the belt. And so you don't have to do a whole lot to get the attention of the brass to give you that shot. But you got to be good. You can't be like long drawn out 5-round fight winner. You got to be doing something special. So for Alex Perez, I don't know what this does for him. He's currently ranked at 8th. You know, he's got Tim Elliott ranked below him and Steve Ersig ranked right below that. So Alex Perez, was that knockout impressive enough to put him in line against, to put him in the title contention spot after this pay-per-view? I don't know. I really don't. I mean, he beat Mateos, who was ranked fifth. So is this like, you tell me, when you beat someone that's that far ranked above you, do they usually swap places, or is it just like, you know, you have to be able to, do you jump up that much, or what is usually happens in the rankings when something like that goes down?
I mean, there's a lot of little factors. How active was the other guy? How active were you before you got the upset? You know, MMA math, you know, like, right. If you beat number two, but you lost to number three and four before that, you don't jump to number two. They kind of just move three and four up, and then you kind of move into the three and four spot with the other guy. You know what I mean? So it's little things like that. I would expect that they more or less kind of swap places, and Perez will be ahead of Nicolau in the middle. And the guys ahead of them will just kind of take Nicolau's spot, and everyone moves up that way. Yeah. In the rankings that are important, but not really, you know what I mean? I always like to say from Pirates of the Caribbean, they're more like guidelines than actual rules. that being said, so here's something we didn't even talk about. Normally I would tell you, all right, well, it should be Perez, and the only other guy that makes sense for him in an eliminator is Muhammad Mukhaev. Natalie, Perez literally fought and lost to Muhammad Mukhaev in early March.
Jeez.
So, you know, the only thing I come up with at the end of all of this is that Muhammad Mukhaev is next for the title. Nothing else makes sense.
I know that's the MMA math.
But here's what's weird. They could have gone with Mukhaev this time. Remember, he got a win the same night Usyk got a win. They went with Usyk over Mukhaev. So, okay.
Yeah.
Make it make sense, right?
Yeah.
I think you need to acknowledge this is the world we live in under the wrath of Pantoja. And two, you know, it's not his fault that the other guys couldn't beat Pantoja. Next man up. Let's go. Yeah. You know, it's not my fault you guys can't get the dub. So I think that Mukhaev should just lean into that. I know he's more of a quieter, more respectful, soft-spoken young man. But I think when they talk about you and the title shot, you got to just lean into that. Because otherwise, you know, it's like, what are we doing? I'm not going to wait around for Moreno. The Brandons have had their shot. Cop, just had really struggling with consistency right now.
Yeah.
So I think that Mukhaev is, you know, let's just roll with it and keep the ball rolling, you know, keep the ball moving, because nothing else makes sense in that title picture. You know what I mean?
It's like nobody's exciting enough to truly pop. So we're having to do these, like, you know, deeper conversations about, like, well, this guy did that one thing that one time, and this guy did that thing. And
well, yeah, think about it. Easily, this division has more parity than bantamweight. And look how many killers are at bantamweight.
Yeah.
I mean, all these guys literally fight each other, beat each other. The only one who isn't taking L's is Pantoja, and that's why he's at the top.
Yeah.
Fair play to him.
Yeah.
But it's like, you look at Perez and his run now. You look at Mukhaev. You look at Roival. You look at Moreno. Cop, you know, this is quite the thing, you know, that we have going on. So, yeah, I look at it, Mukhaev gets the next title shot.
Okay.
And nothing else makes sense. If anything, I would go Perez Roival. Shoot, let me double check. They fought each other, and I'm just forgetting when. Come on, Wi-Fi. Da-da-da-da-da. No, they haven't even fought each other. Perfect. So Mukhaev fights the winner of Pantoja Ursig. Perez fights Brandon Royval. Boom, we figured it out.
Yeah, I'm down with that.
Nothing else makes sense.
I don't even want to. Yep, that's it. Just stop talking. Let's go. Not you, but I mean, let's just stop and move on.
There you go. Yeah, so look, Like I said, I know there's that post 300 hangover, even though there was technically a week off. But yeah, look, things rolling along. We'll get to this Saturday's pay-per-view. Let's talk about some MMA news. Bellator Paris announcing some changes for May 17th. The main one, lightweight champion Usman Nurmagomedov is out of the fight. He suffered an injury, so both he and the Grand Prix finalist Alexander Shabli are off the card. It wasn't a tournament fight anyway. Essentially, they were just giving Shabli the title shot. I'm assuming they're going to probably look to rebook that later. Cedric Doumbé, who you'll remember obviously had that whole thing happen in Paris also.
Yeah.
He was added to the card. The day after they announced that he's fighting Derek Anderson, Derek Anderson posts his foot getting sliced up in a hit and run. He's out of the fight, but it's all good. We now have fellow Bellator vet Jaleel Willis, who will be on the card, taking on Cedric Doumbé. It's all good. Obviously, at the top of the card is Patchy Mix, the Bantamweight champion, rematch with Magomed Magomedov. And the PFL/Bellator's newest signee, former Cage Warriors champion Paul Hughes, great win streak, taking on Bobby King. Hughes, former Cage Warriors 145 champion, and he was moving up, starting to do his thing at 55 before he got the call. I'd heard that UFC was interested in Mr. Hughes, but he just had a better offer from PFL. Obviously, he's, you know, they're mid-season. He probably could have been in the running, but because of the timing, they're bringing him in Bellator. Very likely he could be on pay-per-view and the tournament next year for PFL. Overall, what do you think of the changes to the card? Because the new PFL Bellator regime, it's kind of a weird one, I think, to... I know the fights are objectively good. It's just about the packaging, I think, that is still throwing me off. What about you?
Yeah, there's something that I almost feel guilty about not being excited, because we talked so much leading up to this acquisition, this merger, how fired up we were, man, this is great, Bellator is going to be, and PFL, you know, all these fighters are going to come together. And they had these big fight cards where they clashed, and I mean, you know, big, but still nothing bigger than the UFC, and okay, that's fine. I guess to be expected, right? But I'm just like, okay, Cedric Doumbé and this one guy, Derek Anderson, and now it's, okay, all right, cool. Well, that should be a good fight. That's like my feeling. It's like, you know, like if you put a heart monitor on me and measured it, my heart rate while we're having these conversations, that, you know, not getting very elevated. Okay, not every fight's a banger. But again, I feel guilty for not being more excited and not being more interested, because I want, you know, other MMA brands apart from the UFC to thrive. And of course, you know, my reaction does not affect their ability to have success. But I can't imagine I'm the only one feeling this lack of, you know, energy about it.
So I think it kind of goes back to a few of the other things that we've kind of discussed. Getting a lot of the momentum is definitely one of the challenges of any promotion, not just the PFL, Bellator, one championship, you know, especially in particular conquering the United States, for example. I think that objectively looking at this, I think that it comes down to a few things. I think that for one, I don't know that outside of Usman, there was a lot of objective momentum to want to see these fights. And not just because, you know, however you feel about the star power of Doumbé or the star power of Patchy.
Right.
But I think that it's like objectively like, all right, you know, Cedric Doumbé is making all this noise, right?
Mm-hmm.
I kind of want to see him against, you know, Assad Abusi. I want to see him against one of these guys, you know, doing their thing in the welterweight division, you know. What's my guy? Jason Jackson. It's like I was about to call him, you know, one of the Dagestani names, and I'm like, wait, I'm getting confused. But like I want to see that, right? Like I don't know that the momentum is there for me to see, you know, him against one of the lower ranked guys. That starts to feel a little bit like maybe one of the main criticisms of Michael Venom Page. You get what I mean?
Yeah.
So I think objectively as a fan, I think that's one of the things that is keeping me from getting that, you know, extra, you know, just jolt of enthusiasm for it. That's the one. I think, two, it's just the way the entire talent pool is spread out, right? Because I look at, let's say, Usman Nurmagomedov. Okay, one, I still don't like how this all happened for Shabli. Shabli said it himself, like, I thought I was fighting for a million. I'm not fighting for a million. I'm sorry, but yes, you should be allowed to complain about that as much as you want.
Yeah.
And I say that as someone who's understands, you know, I don't think it's rocket science how the PFL is trying to do things. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And what they have available. But if I'm Shabli, you're dang right. I didn't have banned substances come up. I was one of the guys y'all really didn't like, but I won the fights, and now look what happened to me. Yes, you're dang right it sucks. So part of that, I would imagine, if you are invested in Bellator, eventually trickles down to your enthusiasm for the product, right?
Yeah.
And then finally, I think it's just, you know, let's just say it objectively. The UFC... pay-per-view wise and their ability month to month to get the fans invested, they're really in one of the best strides that they've ever had. I mean, you look at these last four pay-per-views, you know, 296, 297, well, from 298, 299, 300 onward. I mean, this has been an amazing 3 month stretch for the UFC. And then they're still running fight nights most every week. That is a lot of MMA content to keep the casual consumer happy.
Yeah.
So you put those three things together, I think that it's kind of there. You know, when I going back to Usman Nurmagomedov, I really wish that, oh my gosh, what's my guy? Oh, why am I blanking on his name? He beat Clay Collard in the final. Big mustache.
Oh, no.
Olivier Aubin Mercier. Okay. Yeah. Sorry, I'm like, why can't I roll it off the tongue? We freaking talk about him. I was like, Usman versus Olivier. Let's go. I know he's retiring. Come on, it's right there. Lightweight champ. That was the fight I was ready for, right? We don't have that fight. Instead, it's like, all right, one of the top guys is not getting that big showcase in Usman Nurmagomedov. I think all of those things add up to what are we doing with, you know, the brand itself. And then obviously the other talent around is a little, you know, it's spread out, you know, with the, some of the big name guys are in the PFL tournament. Some of the other guys are in, you know, they're maybe on deck for the pay-per-view and maybe they'll have a showcase in the middle of the year. That's just how, I don't know that all that adds up to let me not miss the Bellator card. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I think that was a long answer, but if I try to break it down, that's what I think it comes down to. To many fans, I know it's just point number three. There's enough UFC. I don't need extra. For the fans who are fans of everything, I think that that's one of the things that the Bellator PFL merger is struggling to overcome, and that's actually matching enough fights that keeps that momentum going month to month, not just the pay-per-view to the pay-per-view.
Yeah, it's tricky. Yeah. It is what it is, right? Hey, yeah. Speaking of PFL,
mm-hmm.
This is a total aside, but somehow related. That picture of you that you sent me with the baddest woman on the planet. I like how you wore your PFL t-shirt. Was that a strategic move?
No, that was just a coincidence. You know what? Every now and then you get some stuff, okay? And it was nice. Here's the thing. So I ran into the baddest woman alive after I got back. And so you'll remember I've been traveling essentially 2 weeks. All my clothes are still dirty.
Yeah.
So, you know, oh, I need a fresh shirt. Oh, how about this nice new one I got? I know it hasn't been worn yet.
Yeah.
But, yeah, so.
Oh, okay. Because I was thinking, I was like, okay, I was looking at that picture. Amazing. I was like, okay, if you wore a UFC t-shirt, maybe that would put her off. Maybe. I don't know. I don't think she has any hard, bad feelings about it, right? But, like, maybe. But, like, you want to signal that you're, you know, in the world of MMA, that you know the support. Excuse me. I was like, PFL, it's a good, safe bet. She's not mad at them for anything. So I was way overthinking it. But anyway, I must have been
You thought I knew something someone else didn't? I appreciate that.
No, I was just like, I was just thinking, like, you want to let her know you're into, like, you know, you're part of the world, but you don't want to put a brand out there that maybe she isn't a fan of anymore or has some harsh feelings for. You know, she's been very vocal about WWE lately.
You know what? So if I may say so, I noticed from my vantage point and the people I saw trying to meet her and say hi, there were more UFC fans than WWE fans.
Okay.
And I wasn't sure if I expected that. I actually felt like, you know, there may be a little more wrestling people who were, you know, pumped up about it. But yeah, yeah. The people I saw, they kind of felt like there were a few people just there because it was a big event. She wasn't the only author there.
Yeah.
But yeah, there was just a lot going on, if I may say so. So
awesome.
And it was more MMA love than WWE love, you know, for her. So
it made that's actually surprising.
Yeah. Yeah. Right.
Yeah.
Okay. Back to Bellator. Look. Anytime you get to see a talent like Patchy is big. Certainly Cedric. Paul will most likely get a big push, and if he performs well, that'll be good. I think the thing just comes back to making matchups that get me objectively excited. And I don't know that we have that.
Right.
I feel like all the A-sides don't have a good B-side that are really relevant there. So I think that's what it's missing, plain and simple.
Do you think it would have been better if PFL had just dissolved the Bellator brand, brought all their fighters over, and then, you know, continued making tournament fights and, you know, regular fights just all under the PFL banner? Would that have been easier to process, more exciting?
Slightly. I feel like, yes. You know what I think it is? I think it's a weird thing because we're doing this, and I think it's almost purposefully with the intention of thinning out the roster. You know, this year, okay, if you weren't a Bellator star, who actually still makes the cut by the end of the year?
Okay.
Like, okay, you got picked up, you're still in Bellator in January. If you lose two or three fights this year across the international series, that probably doesn't, one, like any fighter, isn't good for your job security. But two, okay, now PFL can kind of reassess, all right, is this a thin enough herd that we can just funnel it straight into a full mega tournament or mega roster?
Yeah.
You
mega
know.
Roster. Yeah.
Yeah. So I would imagine that's a big part of it. I think objectively, you just can't expand the roster that fast and then just sort it out the way you did before.
Okay.
And we talked about this a little bit, is that the things that made PFL appealing to free agents is a lot different now than it was this time last year. Because, you know, there's the big fish, small pond element. There's all this other stuff, the resources. Now, I mean, look how much more competition. It is harder this year than ever before to win that $1 million contract. Whereas if you were a UFC guy, you know, maybe, like, I think about, like, where Liz Carmouche was. And there are a bunch of contenders, hey, you know, won a few, lost a few, got a title shot, didn't win it, still dangerous. A ton of those guys last year, you would have felt, would have been right in the mix for a PFL tournament victory. They would have been an odds-on favorite. Instead, those guys probably don't see it as appealing because now it's like, well, the competition is actually tougher now. And if I'm not getting a big contract, it's not, you know, it's not worth it to make the jump potentially. Especially when you're fighting for a brand like UFC that everyone is still invested in, can still grow your profile a lot faster. So That's what I think is going on.
All right.
You just can't expand it that fast and in the span of a few months, one, honor all the contracts, and two, still change your entire business model for how you do events with the tournament and everything.
So, okay.
So I expect at the end of this year, we'll see a very different roster just on the nature of the cuts. Yeah.
That makes sense.
Objectively, yeah, look, I'll watch Doombay, I'll watch Patchy, I'll see what's going on. I just feel like, in particular, this card doesn't have as much spice. And also, before I let us go, Patchy Mix beat everybody. He beat Magomed. He beat Sergio. He beat Rafion. What other big bantamweights are there for him to fight? What's his name? Sabatello? He didn't run into Sabatello during the tournament, but I know that the fans are like, oh, you know, I really need to see Patchy beat Sabatello before it's all over. I'm not sure. You know what I mean? So, yeah. A lot of these things got to get sorted out first. So, we'll go from there.
All right.
The next one, Jamahal Hill coming back at UFC 303 to take on Mr. Khalil Roundtree Jr. They are the co-main event of UFC 303, headlined by Conor McGregor. This one, they announced it less than a week after UFC 300. And fans really had a lot of questions. First off, protocols and all that. You don't think that Jamahal really has been allowed in the gym, let alone should be allowed to take fights. But here we are. So let's just start there. What was your reaction to seeing Jamahal getting booked again so fast?
Well, my reaction was, don't do it. You're going to get knocked out and Khalil Roundtree is going to make a name off of you. That was my first reaction. We've seen it. And, like, I've always been a proponent of, hey, man, Volk, yeah, get in there, get after it. Short notice, but, you know, short notice to Islam. And then right back into it with Ilya, and we saw what happened. Now, it's not as simple as he was already, you know, he had a knockout, and so it was easier to get another knockout. But, like, that plays a large role in it. We saw it with Bisping and GSP. He was submitted, but it was still a lot of damage. Then he goes in Calvin Gastelum and gets 1-2 like right quick. I don't think this is a smart move for Jamahal. There's no reason to rush it. Like, you know, I guess I'll say he's not the biggest name, even though he was the you know, on the main event for the UFC 300. He's not like the biggest name, and so that could cut both ways. Either he feels pressure to get himself back out there to keep his brand alive, or he feels like, you know, hey man, I'm top stuff. Let's be a warrior. So anyway, all back to the original question: how did I feel? Didn't like it, and I think Khalil Roundtree's gonna have a big night. What did you think?
So I'm thinking about it the way, remember Jessica Andrade, how active she's been? And she talked about, like, well, you know, signed a new contract and, you know, very big one. Jamahal Hill, go watch his YouTube. He said it. They renegotiated me a great new deal because they understood I am expediting my comeback from a serious injury to be a part of this.
Right.
The optics of it, let's say it like it is. Yeah, it does look like, well, now it just makes me feel like UFC 300, the biggest fight ever, you kind of went out there for a paycheck.
Yeah.
That's 99% probably not true, but that's what it looks like, right? Yeah. It ends quickly in the first round, this and that. And now look, when the cage door closed, I'm sure he had every intention of doing what he needed to do and scoring that upset over Pajeda. Didn't happen. But now hearing this, now seeing this, it's kind of like, so was UFC 300 just a blip in the schedule? You know, this is the biggest event ever, right? And
yeah,
the hype and the this and the that, right? And then two, I mean, any version of a TKO, anytime you are dropped like that and you are looking up at your opponent like you don't know what's going on, it does make me think, you shouldn't be this or that, right? Now, I'm not saying everybody is, you know, Bryce Mitchell against Josh Emmett slept. But still, I feel like, longevity of your career, it is not good to make quick turnarounds following stoppages like that.
Yeah, so, for sure.
That's just how I think it looks optically. Once again, I mean, these guys always talk about wanting to fight more. This is how they pay their bills. I would imagine Jamal wants to take advantage of his new contract as quickly and as, you know, just as often as possible. That being said, yeah, in terms of as a fan, when I see a fighter try to kind of make that quick turnaround after a stoppage, it's like, you know. Because I want to see you doing all that you can to be the best ever, right?
Right.
So if I feel like you're just going out there for a paycheck and let's just see what happens, that kind of is counterproductive to my enthusiasm as a spectator, right?
Yeah.
So I think that's what you're looking at. Objectively, it's a good fight. We know what Jamal can do. He has more time now to prepare, get in shape. Anything lingering with that Achilles, rest it up and heal it up. Khalil Roundtree on a great run, obviously stopped Anthony Smith in December. Absolute powerhouse on the feet. Anything, you know, really dangerous anytime the fists and the knees and the shins are flying. So makes for an objectively fun fight, potentially. So I don't hate it from that standpoint. My other question, what do you think about this? The Conor McGregor, Michael Chandler will have zero other title fights in June. Or actually, there's no title fight at all. Sorry.
Yeah. When's the last time we had a pay-per-view like that? Probably was Conor McGregor, right? Versus Nate Diaz.
Right.
I think it's fine because it's, look, he's still the man. And so it makes total sense. I'm okay with it. It'd be better if they could put... Well, here's the thing. If there was a title fight, I think the UFC would not put it on the co-main position, right? They would put it above... Like, they'll never put a title fight as a co-main to a non-title fight. Is that accurate?
You know what? In this case, they would. They would put Conor over, let's say, Weili and Jan.
Right, yeah, okay.
Or even... okay, there's only, like, two other guys with titles that they would ever put over a Conor, and I think that's Adesanya and John Jones. Even, okay, like, for example, let's say hypothetically they added Dracus versus Adesanya to the fight. Even though he's not champion, they'd put Adesanya's fight over Conor with the
they
belt.
They would, for sure, yeah.
But anyone else, you're taking co-main to Conor, plain and simple.
Yeah, and so...
Aspinall, O'Malley,
yeah,
it just is.
Yeah, O'Malley, yeah. Interesting. O'Malley.
Oh, yeah. O'Malley would be co-main to Conor.
Yeah.
Okay. Even though he's got the belt right now.
Yeah, yeah. All right. And not surprised that he's the co-main, that he's the main with, you know, no belt, obviously. But yeah, I guess there's no... Is there nobody available? Or is it just a choice that they made because they wanted him to be the top dog?
I mean, remember, we talked about it. They can't stack an event like 300 and 299 every month.
Right.
You don't have enough roster. Here's my thing about it objectively. And I know what we are going to get 2 months of the return of the Mac and Roadhouse and Tough and how bad he still wants it and why this is the biggest star ever in MMA. You remember the hype for the cowboy fight? And, we didn't talk about losing to Habib. We didn't talk about fighting Floyd. We talked about, you know, the Mac is back, ESPN Plus. They had that great commercial, right? They're about to do a lot of that. Objectively, I look at this and I get it. You're going to sell the matchup on the moment being too big for Michael Chandler. Objectively, from the outside, as a guy who watches this a lot, there is every reason to think that Michael Chandler has multiple ways to take out Conor.
Yeah.
They can bang, and Chandler, being very powerful himself, can get it done. There's also the very blunt Michael Chandler's wrestling. He can just straight up say he's gonna bang all week, and the second the bell rings, he blasts doubles Connor to the floor.
Yep.
And we're talking about, as a fan, and not saying that, you know, look, I have a different role in the business, so I acknowledge that. But as a fan, you are now saying, if you know that going in, you now have to convince this fan base that knows that to pay $85 to watch that, potentially. Yeah. I think that's where the hook is. That's why, well, at least if there's other champions, other number ones on the card, it's going to be good. We don't have that right now. The deck has to be shuffled to fill up still what is the second half of the year. So,
yeah, it's kind of tricky, a little bit unfortunate, really, that, you know, we're glad to get Connor, of course, finally locked in. Yeah. But because of the fights that preceded his, yeah, man, it's like, this is the co-main?
You're kind of gambling that they're, you know, that Connor can still pull the people in, I think.
Yeah, they've got a... I'm not satisfied with this. I mean, it's kind of on a smaller scale how we felt, or I felt, you know, I won't speak for you, but when Pereira Hill became announced as the main for 300, then we got over it, and it ended up being a great, you know, one-minute fight. But Jamal Hill, Khalil Roundtree is just like, that doesn't really move the dial, right? And it's not worthy of a Conor McGregor co-main, but okay, we just came off of like blockbuster pay-per-views and who's left. So I get it, but I hope they keep filling up the card with some good stuff. Let's round it out a little bit.
I mean, look, there's so many other like matches, anything could obviously happen, but I think when I look at 300, it was the collective. This one, objectively, it's like, all right, you're really banking on that, the Conor McGregor pull. And to be fair, there are a ton of people who don't tune into this regularly, who watch fights after the fact, who just care about seeing the Mac. And yep, that's fine. It's kind of like the Jon Jones Stipe thing. You know what? It's okay to say he's just a big enough star that you just want to watch him do his thing.
Yeah, Floyd, like yeah.
Floyd Mayweather. There were a few guys not a lot of people cared for. That's fine. Yeah. You know, people wanted to see Floyd that bad. That's okay too. That's what it means to be a superstar.
Yeah.
But you can't tell me that this fight, objectively, here and now, where Conor is in his fight career, not business. We could talk about him being at the top of the business all day. I'm talking about inside the cage, this Conor McGregor, how much are you banking on him being able to pull it off against Michael Chandler? That's what we're talking about. And I think that that's where the tough sell is coming for me for this card.
So, yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, let's talk about some other fights we have going on, yeah?
Yeah.
Let's start from the co-main event. Jose Aldo making his return against Jonathan Martinez. What's ironic, I'm about to say something you don't normally say. Jonathan Martinez, here and now, has the more lethal leg kicks.
Isn't that crazy?
Bro, I was thinking about that. I was like, oh, well, you know, yeah. Am I literally about to say someone else has the more dangerous leg kicks than Jose Aldo? Jonathan, look, he uses those weapons to his advantage. We've seen him in recent fights. Obviously, he's on a good run himself. He comes from a great team where a bunch of them have those good kicks and really put it together. He is very well aware of the opportunity in front of him. Jose Aldo, we talked about this objectively. Love Jose Aldo, who doesn't? I think this whole thing has come together rather awkwardly, right? I think we just closed the book on Jose Aldo. I'm retired. I don't want to make another run. I'm looking to do this. He was doing the boxing thing. He went into the Hall of Fame. It's like, all right, you know, like, we shed our tears with Jose. Yep. We've celebrated Jose, and now it's like, all right, but I'm back. And it's like, huh? You know?
Yep.
And it's like, it's not bad. I'm not going to say I don't want to watch Jose Aldo, but it's like, what are we in it for now? You know, like, respectfully, you beat Jonathan Martinez. You're not ahead of Corey Sanhagen. You're not ahead of Marab. You're arguably still going to be right there neck and neck with Umar. You're not going to jump ahead of Umar. So you would probably have to take a fight like that. And it's like, is that what we're looking to do at this stage of the career? I kind of need to hear that. I kind of need to know that that's what he's in it for. Otherwise, it's like, are we just enjoying the Jose Aldo showcase? Which is objectively fine. Him and yeah. Rio, there's a reason he's called the King of Rio. But that's just how I feel about the whole thing. Stylistically, all the potential to be a fun fight. Both of them, fantastically dangerous strikers. Whether it ends in 1 minute or at minute 15, it's gonna be good. But storyline-wise, I was a little like, oh, this is a different one.
Do you think that Jose just wants to win in Rio one last time? Or win in Brazil, you know?
I always thought he would. He had, I always thought they would give him one more in Brazil because at the time when he lost to Marab, months later there was a Brazil card and it's like, they're going to give him that one. You're going to put him there to complete the contract or what have you.
Yeah, I remember talking about that,
Because this should be, if I did the math correctly, this is the last fight on Aldo's contract.
It's the last fight. I think he just wants to win in Brazil, man.
I thought so too. I mean, I've heard other things. Other people maybe wanting to throw money at Jose. But obviously, like, UFC... Jose Aldo still brings in a lot of money.
Yeah.
So UFC isn't going to just dissolve that last fight. I think they'll be like, well, honor it, and then we could go into restricted free agency or what have you. But, yeah, I think that for sure, whether it's contractual freedom or whether it is... You know, let's be real. Even if he, if it is just one more opportunity to be in Brazil, which, let's be honest, the other big shows don't go to, I'm sure he objectively, all business aside, wants that for the emotion and the sentiment. So, yeah.
Yeah, I agree. I think it's just like, okay, you give me the chance, they're in Brazil, let's go. As far as how the fight actually plays out, I think it's going to be a competitive fight, back and forth. Jose Aldo was always surprising us with his speed, even at this age. I was watching a YouTube channel. I can't remember what it's called. We Take Bets or something. It's one of those channels that gives you, you know, reviews fight cards and also gives you odds for betting. And the gentleman on there was totally convinced. And maybe you've heard this rumor that Jose Aldo is not the age he says that he's. He believes he's like way older than he actually is because of, you know, just documents being flubbed in the transition from Brazil to America.
My word.
And so, you know, that sounds, it's hilarious. It's, you know, I've personally never heard that before, but it wouldn't surprise me. This Jose Aldo is the kind of guy that, you know, he looks great for his age, but he also looks like he could fight into his 50s. And so, you know, I'm not saying he's 50, of course, but the man is always surprising us. Just when we thought he was down and out, he came back, he beat, was it Moicano, Jeremy Stevens. Like, these were great moments in his career. And then, you know, of course, can't get through someone like Marab, which, you know.
A few people have had that problem.
Right. It's like one of those things where when you look at someone's last few fights before they retire, like Donald Cerrone, it's like, oh, you mean he couldn't beat Justin Gaethje and Conor McGregor and who else? I can't remember who else he fought, like the top five killers of the lightweight division that for the most part are still there at the top. And so, you know, the same for Jose Aldo with Marab, like, yeah, okay, doesn't really say much about Jose Aldo. All that being said, I'm still ready to be surprised and amazed by him. I think I will be again on Saturday night. With all that Martinez brings, including the leg kicks, the leg kick TKO that he had over, I can't remember who it was. I think Jose Aldo is going to be, you know, invigorated and filled with the energy and spirit of Brazil, and he's gonna bring home a victory.
Yeah, I mean, I'll say this. I think that if Jose Aldo's any bit near the guy who was on that run on his way, even against Marab, he still provides a ton of problems. If in any way that eye is off the ball, I hate to say, Martinez is no joke. Yeah. That guy he wants it. He's going in wanting it. I think that the crowd is going to do their best to throw him off. They're going to be so, you know, va morir. And,
you know,
they're going to act like Jose Aldo is like Jesus Christ making that giant statue in the city move. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
That's the kind of energy he's going to bring out there to those fans, Zaldo. Martinez got to take on both of that. But you know that, you know, get a few punches going, feel him out a bit. If it starts to look that way, Martinez is dangerous enough to get it done, regardless of what the fans are chanting. So I do think that you got to respect that. I'm with you, though. It's like, I just don't see this any other way for Aldo. I'm kind of riding all emotion. Whether it's the last one, whether there's another chapter, Jose Aldo for the win.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, baby.
Yeah. Let's go unanimous decision.
Yeah.
I think they're just going to they're gonna beat the heck out of each other. Look, before we talk about it, the card itself, look, once again, post there, it's not UFC 300. I think people got to kind of let go of that.
We got to get over it, yeah.
I'm seeing a lot of people like, we're coming off of the site, guys, it's not a centennial. It's not WrestleMania. You got to just enjoy it, back to regularly scheduled programming. Objectively, there's some good stuff on the card. Elvis Brenner on the prelims. Kyle Bahio versus Paul Craig stands out to me opening the main card. Obviously, Kyle's on a good run and they're building him up. Paul Craig is always a challenge, always exciting, whether he's winning or losing. Michel Pereira following his dance moves and his win. So that's back-to-back exciting guys. You got a vet in Anthony Smith testing Petrino. And then, of course, our two-pack at the top. Objectively, that's not a bad set of fights. So I think it's just about, you know, you're going to have to take the star power out of it. They're not bad fights. Once again, I get it. You're paying 85. You've probably been used to paying 85 at 298, 299, 300. Objectively, it's good fights, you know. And I think there's a few things in there that are going to surprise some fans. So I want to say that before we get into the main event.
Yeah, I agree with you. I bet the numbers will suffer a little bit, though, because there's probably fatigue.
Yeah.
Yeah, but one last thing before you go to the main. Anthony Smith, I know he's not a legendary fighter and he had his crack at the belt, but he's extremely likable and he does, you know, a lot of commentary work on his podcast. And I got to tell you, there's lots of great walkout songs. You know, I think my favorite, Ronda Rousey, Anderson Silva, even Chris Weidman, you know, Won't Back Down, Tom Petty. I really love Anthony Smith's walkout music, Return of the Mac. Like, that song is so good. And every time I hear it, I think about Anthony Smith. So, you know, one of the best walkout songs for me, in my opinion, for me. And anyway.
Oh, yeah.
Looking forward to that.
Criminally underrated walkout.
Yeah,
I am with
exactly,
you there.
Exactly.
Yeah. No shame there. I am with you. Let's talk about it. Ursig versus Pantoja. The subject of this week's title, The Path of Pantoja.
Yeah.
I don't need to tell you what Pantoja's done. He has beaten pretty much every top contender in the division, a couple of them twice. He's back home in Brazil. Every reason you should call him the favorite, he's the favorite. Steve Ursig, 3 fights in UFC, 7 fight win streak overall, great talent coming out of Australia, looked more impressive in his last victory against, But the fact is, he and Makhachev fought on the same night, and it kind of felt like, yeah, Matt Schnell. He looked better against Matt Schnell than Makhachev did in his fight, and I think that's why they gave it to Ursig over Makhachev. So that's how process of elimination, we've reached Steve Ursig going into it. Now, I can say it to you objectively, he would admit it as much, even if it doesn't always feel as good. I get it. They haven't built up Ursig very well going into a UFC pay-per-view headliner in enemy territory.
Yeah.
Okay. Steve Ursig, you know, tough guy, younger than Pantoja, I believe, at 28. I saw his little thing. He was getting some advice from Alexander Volkanovski, who knows a thing or two about going into Rio and getting a dub as an Australian, in case y'all forgot. So every reason, you know, Usyk's going out there to do what Usyk is going to try to do. You're up against Pantoja. And arguably, I would put Pantoja in, amongst all these champions, I'd put him at like top five toughest guys overall for their most dominant in their division.
Yeah.
When you look at what he's done, I mean, I don't know. Dracus hasn't fought as many of these names at the top of his division. Aspinall is right there. Aspinall is one of the few guys out there. Leon Edwards. I would argue Pantoja right now, division to division, more top level guys in his weight class than Leon Edwards he's taken out. Now, mind you, there's something to be said for bigger and badder, Kamaru and Colby. But you tell me, you know, any of those other champions wouldn't love to have done to their division what Pantoja has done. I think that you got to respect the run Pantoja is on. It's going to kind of be, I think, I'll tip the hand a little bit. You have to, similar to Royval, you have to sit down and you got to really make Pantoja respect you. Because I think that Pantoja's biggest thing, he's not a home run hitter all the time. His really big weapon is that he's very technically sound and he's very well-rounded. You saw that against Royval. Royval really put the pressure on him, but the takedowns bailed out Pantoja, kept him ahead of the game. I think if you're Usyk, you got to do a similar thing, but you really got to make Pantoja feel your physicality, because when he's able to flow and he's able to start setting things up and it's not a battle, that's when things start to really get going and it runs away from people against Alexandre. So I think that if you're Usyk, you're going to have to step into the fire a little bit, because you're going to have to create that chaos if you want to throw off a guy who has been so consistent in Pantoja for the win. So I think that's the mountain he has to climb. By all means, I never hate on anybody. If you're going to be the guy to pull off the upset, let's go, bro. Let's do it. But this is quite the mountain in front of Steve Usyk.
It is, man. And like, you know, the record is impressive. Hasn't lost since 2017, but only the last three fights were in the UFC. Everything else was regional. Eternal MMA, I'm assuming that's somewhere in Australia.
It's all Australia.
Oh, yeah. And so, of course, there's a competition, a gap in, you know, quality of competition, right? Not discounting the victories, but that's a 12-1 record, and you're fighting Pantoja for the belt in Brazil. That's a lot, man. That's as you said, that's a big mountain to climb. When I look at Pantoja in his eyes, I see a murderer. He scares me the way Charles Oliveira scares me. When I look at Steve Usyk, I see a man who looks like the cousin of Jim Carrey. Like, he just doesn't have that face of a killer. I'm not saying he's not. It's just there's something funny about the look that
I've heard Steve Carell.
Yeah, Steve Carell works too. Actually, that the eye position. I've clearly been studying this picture a lot. These photos of Steve Usyk. Steve Carell. I also think Jake Gyllenhaal and Bubble Boy. Like, these are the things I think of when I see Steve Usyk. Who cares, right? Ryan Hall kind of looks a little like Ryan Hall. Ryan Hall's a killer. So obviously, you don't get to this position, title shot against Pantoja in Brazil without being such. But it's just not going to be enough. I don't think it's going to be enough. Pantoja's too well-rounded, like you said. He can transition so swiftly from all of his skill sets on the feet, on the ground, against the cage. And I think it'll be too much for Usyk. It'll be a good showcase for Pantoja and a great moment for him to win what I think will be a unanimous decision in Brazil.
I agree. I actually think it would be bigger. I think he's going to be a little more intent on finding the finish.
Okay.
I'll call it right now. Should Usyk pull off the upset. I predict it's going to be one of those moments where Zig instead of Zag and Ursig just kind of gets Pantoja the same way Perez caught Nicolau.
Yeah, yeah.
You're just going to move into it the wrong way and bam.
Yeah.
You know, so if we get an upset, that's how I predict that's going to happen. Anything other than that, I think this will very much be Pantoja second round submission for the win.
Okay, I like it. Yeah.
Yeah, so I think that that's what we're going to get, essentially. Like I said, I think it could be a good night of fights. I think it's just going to be one of those, you know, you got to go in just looking to enjoy a good night. And then I think that's how it'll all play out. And then, Natalie, not for nothing, the UFC going back to St. Louis, Missouri next week. Derek Lewis against Mr. Nascimento. We just had it announced that we're going to have Mr. Joaquin Buckley on the card. What are your thoughts on this one?
Look, Derek Lewis, anytime, anywhere, I'll watch him forever. You know, he's an extremely entertaining fighter, and that covers both in the cage and on the mic. Nice guy, but also a killer. I don't care about the wins-loss record until it becomes, you know, like I feel like he's taking too much damage. For now, I'm just excited to see him in the cage. And, you know, it's a 50-50 shot with Derek Lewis, win or lose. But, you know, he never quits, so I'm fired up for it.
Yeah, look, obviously, same. One, you know, anytime Derek Lewis is on, if he's on television, I'm watching television.
Yeah.
Outside of that, I mean, you got Menefield and Olberg. That's obviously going to be a banger. Joaquin Buckley. You got T-Rex, Terrence McKinney in action. So you got a few guys who are known for being electrifying, you know, at the top of that card. So I think it's going to be a good night, objectively a fight. So, you know, back in front of a crowd, by the way, I know, for example, Brianna Eckert and others are very excited about this. So I think it's going to be a good night for sure.
Yeah.
Yep.
I have a quick question for you before you sign off. This past fight card, Vegas, UFC Vegas, what was it?
91.
Sure. A reporter got the call to go in the cage and do the ring.
Oh, Charlie Arnold. Yeah.
Yes. What did you think of that, man? And what do you think if it was you there and they tapped you on the shoulder and said, Double G, Joe Martinez can't talk. Get in there.
I mean, you know, I'm not, I don't want to take it in name, but JFC, what?
What? Yeah.
Oh, God. You know, one thing I got to say, you know, Charlie does a great job. I think the thing about Charlie, she's kind of come in as that, you know, there's been such a precedent set with Megan O'Leary, obviously, Heidi Andral, Laura Senko plays so many roles on their broadcast team.
Yeah.
And Charlie's kind of newer and kind of one of those less frequently seen faces. I think it's absolutely awesome. I think that having done it before a little bit.
Yeah, you've done it, right? For
Smash Global, yeah.
Yes, thank you, yeah.
I will say I didn't have to announce fights, like in the red corner, in the blue, you know. I did have to announce winners to, you know, our crowd of lovely spectators. And that can be stressful because, you know, it's a lot. So the fact is to have to do that for as many fights as she did. I'm sure she was probably like, just don't fuck it up and handle it.
She must have been sweating profusely. I don't know.
Yeah, just she did great. Congratulations, Charlie.
Yeah.
And she does a great job. She's been a longtime broadcaster, so I think that's really cool.
It seemed awesome. And, you know, Joe Martinez was able to come back, so that's great too. But it's one of those moments where you're just like, what, me? Okay, let's go. Let's do this. And you just got to shine. It's cool then.
Oh my gosh, it was quite the night, no?
Yeah.
But yeah, so look, the UFC is back in action. Everything's back in action, so are we. We'll be back next week to recap the pay-per-view and talk about all of the action. Until then, remember, like, comment, subscribe. Have a good one.